and welcome back to This Week on Channel 9.
You are?
I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez, and we're back in the studio together.
I know, it's been weeks since you and I have sat at this desk together.
Yes, so stuff's still going on with the car, so I'll be back up and down for the next 3 weeks or so.
And you've been traveling. West Coast Customs guys. Yeah, I just finished a 5-week four-continent speaking tour.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. So, really, there's news here, and let's just get right into it. So,
that's right. Yeah.
So, first story, smile for the camera. Now, this is a Roborazzi?
Roborazzi, that's right. Not to be confused with paparazzi. So, this is, the idea is that the Robotics Studio 4 allows you to build robots that have the Kinect as like its vision and its ability to like move around the room and things like that. And so what this guy did is he actually took the Robotic Studio 4, he built a robot, it's got a laptop on it, it's got the Kinect on it, and it moves around, the idea is it moves around like a party looking for any visible skeletons that it can then take a picture of. And so by the end of the night, you've got all these pictures of people at your party, and it can automatically upload them to Flickr. I mean, this thing is really cool. Like, I wonder how it works in practice with lots of people at a party, that kind of thing.
I think we need to get one and try it out, because I think this would be fun to do.
I think so, and there's actually one that's following Kim Kardashian around full-time now. So,
okay, because of the divorce, sure.
Yeah,
that makes
exactly.
Sense.
Yeah.
So our next story is updating laptops without draining your battery. So this is, again, the B8, the Building Windows 8 blog, and the idea is to kind of explain the thinking on, hey, we're going to have live tiles, and those live tiles are going to give us the latest information, say, notifications, actions that are happening, things that, account of, say, emails and so on. How do we do this in a way that it doesn't actually, the more you use it, the more it hurts your system, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, so Steven Sanofsky talks about how they've gotten a lot of positive feedback about the start screen from people that want to use it for line of business applications. So imagine you're a salesperson and you've got, invoices to approve, POs that are coming in all the time, all sorts of things that you just maybe need to glance at while you're in between meetings. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to have this start screen kind of be your heads-up display, but you don't want it to drain the battery life. All the time. So if you read the whole article, Steven goes into some of the principles that are behind this, such as making sure that nobody's application code is actually running to update those live tiles.
Right.
So all the live tiles are actually data-driven, and that allows them to really optimize that experience for long battery life. So really neat example of how they've taken one sliver of the operating system and really spent a lot of time optimizing that to make sure it's a great experience.
And again, if you have comments or thinking around it, definitely read the article and give your feedback as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So our next one is Build Flashback, which is a classic one. Jensen Harris, who, maybe some people didn't know, but is kind of has become sort of the star, or at least one of the stars, from the Build conference. And what he tries to go through is in detail of the traits that you look for styling applications.
Right.
So I'm going to style applications, and he spends, it was that foundational, that day one after the keynotes, going through what is the style, the fast and fluid, and what does that actually mean? Mm-hmm. And here's the iconography, and here's, how we use user input, and here's how we do lists, and here's how we do displays. And, he kind of gets this, he even talks about, like, having the, what would Jensen think about that design? Like, when you're thinking about these applications, and he really stresses that the best applications will be those that are designed well.
Yeah, and I think this illustrates another good point, that if you only watched the Build keynote, then it was kind of like only watching the trailer for a movie. Those foundational sessions are really where they go deep and help you understand, as a developer, what do I need to do? So go to buildwindows.com. The top sessions are listed on that homepage, and then, of course, you can drill in even further to see all the breakout sessions from, I almost said mix, from Build, and understand, what all the individual APIs are going to be.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Good stuff.
So Rob Miles, he maintains these blue and yellow books. They're kind of free, formal books, textbooks kind of things that you can use to learn a variety of topics, including C# and Windows Phone. And he recently updated them for Windows Phone 7.5 and C# V2011, whatever, V11, I guess, whatever the next version of C# is going to be called there. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to go learn about Windows Phone Mango. A second way, if you're interested, is to check out the video recordings from all the Windows Phone 7.5 camps are now available. So those are getting really rave reviews. I know many of you probably went to a Windows Phone 7.5 camp in your neighborhood. But if
and what are those for people that aren't aware or?
Yeah, they're basically free events that Microsoft is putting on around the world. You've probably seen some of the web camps. There's Windows Phone camps. There's Azure camps. There's a number of different camps that are coming. And basically, it's just the idea is that it's a free way for you to kind of dive in and start building some real applications and learning from Microsoft experts about these great technologies. But not everybody can break away to do that, so this is another way that you can consume this content straight
again,
from the browser.
On Channel 9.
That's right.
On
Channel 9. And then another way that you can kind of spoon-feed yourself some Mango every day is to check out the 31 Days of Mango series. So there was a 31 Days of Windows Phone 7 for people that were obviously brand new to programming for Windows Phone 7, as we all were at the time. And then 31 Days of Mango assumes that you are, for the most part, a Windows Phone 7 developer.
It's kind of the what's new for Mango.
Yeah, what's new, exactly.
Yes, because there's a lot of stuff, you know, being able to do application background tasks. Like a classic example is for people who want to listen to music in the background. Mm-hmm. So the Last.fm, if you happen to have Last.fm, the new update actually lets you listen to music as a background task while you're, say, in your Outlook or whatever thing you're doing.
I really love the ability for application developers to support deep linking into your application. Is that what it's called? There's probably a better name for it. But
right.
The idea being that if I need a tombstone in my application because the user's gone back to the home screen, and then the user goes back in to start it, allow them to go back to the same spot that they were. So if they were on, you know, level 3.8 playing Mario or something like that, allow them to jump straight back in there as opposed to going to the start screen and saying continue and load the game or whatever.
Yeah, there's a number of things that they were doing around that whole process of reloading applications. And another one of my favorite features is the ability to have tiles and be able to tile, you know, say you look for an address or an address.
Oh, yeah, to pin directly that to the tile. Yeah, same
kind
exactly.
of idea. Yeah, exactly. So there's just a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And just being able to do that from an application developer's perspective is interesting, including just the built-in ones where you can do like a contact and stuff like that.
You can also have, you can also deep link with a tile straight to a folder in your inbox. So right now, by default, if you just open up the inbox, it goes to the top-level inbox.
To inbox.
Yeah, but maybe I really need to know when Dan's emailing me because it's super important and he's always bugging me all the time. So maybe I want to have a rule that forwards folders. Maybe I won't do this after all. But hypothetically, I'd have a rule that forwards emails from Dan to this folder, and then right there at the home screen, I can see whether or not he's emailing me harassing emails again.
He's creepily moving his hands.
Yeah, that's a little weird. We'll edit that out. So our last thing here focused on Windows Phone is Marvelous Maze. So you know, you don't see a lot of 3D games for Windows Phone, even though they've got a great set of support there with the XNA libraries and all their support. So this Marvelous Maze takes you through a sample application, shows how to use the Milkshape 3D models and load those into the Windows Phone application, and then basically run around this maze.
And that's a tool that allows you to basically build 3D models. So a lot of the hard work for actually building 3D models, you know, there's a number of models you can actually download and use in your application. So if you're not a 3D person.
Exactly. If you're a 2D person like Charlie Brown or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what this means. Okay. So top 100 utilities and add-ins for Visual Studio 2010 and TFS 2010.
Yeah, I love these roll-ups. They always, you know, show. We were talking about some things on the show that even as the TFS evangelist, I hadn't even heard of or checked out yet. So it's good to see this list. And also, I like what Greg Duncan did. He took that.
Yeah, if you look in the corner there, there's actually he took that list and actually made it into a spreadsheet so you can easily sort and filter it.
Yeah, so it's hosted
in
SkyDrive with an Excel web app, so you can easily go through and say, hey, show me all the ones that matter for this particular category. So that's pretty neat.
Love it, Greg. Thank you.
Yep. So, Microsoft Silverlight Analytics Framework.
So we had a dedicated session to this for Mix, but the idea is you want to basically see what people are doing with your Silverlight applications,
yeah,
right?
I mean, you get analytics pretty much for free with web applications, because you can say how many times has someone loaded these pages and what were the request headers and all that stuff.
Sure. You
know, rich analytics that's been around for years, right? But how do you do that with Silverlight? And actually, this isn't strictly Silverlight anymore. It also supports WPF applications. I believe, yeah, phone applications as well. How do you build in an analytics framework so you can understand how much time did someone spend on this particular area of the application? You know, how many people clicked on this particular
button?
For
phone, it's a great one for like how many people are actually clicking, and or if you have multiple paths in an application to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the most successful way to upgrade your application? Is it, you know, at the end of the level? Is it under options upgrade?
Yep.
and stuff like that?
Yep. So I would encourage, if this is at all remotely interesting to you, I would encourage you to check out Michael Schroeder's session from Mix 10, and he also talks about how this is interesting for A/B testing. Are you familiar with A/B testing?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you're not, it's basically the idea of putting two different applications out there and then seeing how users perform or which ones they like better. So you can say, hey, you know, maybe I'm Amazon. I really want to encourage people to
Buy Visual Studio 2010, and there's a headshot of Dan and a headshot of Brian.
Hmm.
And you basically see, you size them correctly and you say which one is going to bring in the bacon.
Exactly. Well, I'm a vegetarian, so that doesn't work for me.
I think the bacon lovers will vote for me.
Yes,
thank you very
probably.
Much.
Probably. You can have the bacon lovers. It's funny, you know, I am a vegetarian, but whenever someone's like making bacon, I'm like, well, of course I eat bacon. I do. Of course.
Don't try and win over my bacon, people.
Well, you can have them. I'm just saying. I occasionally will have a sliver? A piece?
Sliver? A
yeah.
piece? A strip?
Yeah.
A strip. Okay, Async CTP version 3 now available. So there were a number of things that...
First of all, two articles, one from Stephen Taub and one from Lucian. And so these are two articles about Async, and I thought in support of this we could both read them at the same time asynchronously.
Asynchronously?
Yeah, so ready, go.
That didn't sound annoying.
Yeah, not at all.
That does not at all sound annoying. So I think the big things, and I just want to make sure to get these right, is... in terms of the things that they've now fixed with from the April CTP refresh, this refresh fixes, you know, one, if you couldn't install it for certain reasons, you mm-hmm. had dependencies, libraries.
Running a Mac. No, they didn't fix that yet.
No, I don't think so. Okay. Two was the Windows Phone 7.1 SDK. So if you were doing background agents, there were issues using the async CTP library from background agents. And then three is Silverlight 5 tasks, where there were also issues in there. So now they've fixed all those things. This is tasks doing... The Silverlight 5 has a concept of task. Async CTP has a library of tasks.
Two worlds collide.
Yeah, two worlds collide. Mm-hmm. So the point is CTP v3 solves all those issues.
Awesome. So, good job, guys.
Yeah, kudos.
Yeah.
And it's fun to play with.
Yeah. I love this. This one is a fan-created, emphasis on fan-created, what's new in .NET Framework 4.5. So this is super cool. You know, you see Microsoft come out with these posters, and there's a great one from the Build conference that shows kind of the WinRT and Windows 8 runtime, but you may have noticed that we haven't published one on .NET Framework 4.5, and this guy, I forgot his name already, it's on the show notes, he kind of got tired of waiting for us, and he went out and he published his own.
Yeah.
And I was looking at this before, it actually looks pretty accurate.
Comprehensive, yeah.
Yeah, pretty comprehensive and pretty accurate. One thing I do disagree with, he called C Sharp 5. I don't believe we've actually announced that. I'm not sure if we're calling it C Sharp 5 or C Sharp 4.5.
Now, are you
happening.
The C Sharp spokesperson?
I am not.
Is that what you're saying,
Mr.
J Sharp?
All I'm saying is I'm raising some questions.
Okay.
Just,
yeah.
You know, putting question it out
the
there.
Answers. Sure.
Yeah. But I think this is very cool, and it's available. I love it. You can print it out and hang it above your cubicle or wherever you do your coding.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when we talked about last week, the Windows Azure, some of the specific kits for programming, this is the platform training kit. So there's new features in Windows Azure. These is now the training kit that you can use to, say, learn about things like the data tier applications, data sync, federation on SQL Azure.
PowerShell commandlets, yeah.
Yeah, there's just a ton of stuff here. So the idea is, you know, if you're looking to learn on Azure... everyone goes to the training kits now. Stuff's been updated. There's new hands-on labs mm-hmm. and demos.
Cool. That's awesome. So this is one you got pretty excited about. This is an example using the Roslyn CTP. So Roslyn is, they're calling it the compiler as a service kind of idea here.
Yeah, so the idea is if you, for example, can use the compiler as a service and then plug that into PowerShell, you can actually use PowerShell commands to get metadata about your C# files. So, for example, I want to... you know, I have a ton of file shares that all have code. I want to be able to see how much code there is, or how much code that have classes that begin with this, or how many methods have this particular filter or whatever.
And we think you can use it to do comparisons, for example. So, hey, I just shipped, actually, I'll be talking about this. I just shipped a new SDK for TFSO data, and if I wanted to compare that to the old version, it would show me, hey, these classes changed, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so you could imagine using the get Roslyn info, you know, extending this example to, for example, let's say there was 100 method or... You know, 50 classes, 100 methods. Mm-hmm. New version has 60 classes, 120 methods. Mm-hmm. You can actually do the comparison and see where the majority of changes are, and the majority of changes are in this library,
yep.
or there's some things that are deprecated, and you can actually get all that metadata about code. And the nice thing is this shows an example of how you can get all the metadata in Roslyn, and this shows you how to use it from PowerShell as well.
Right. So you say I would have had to use something like Reflector, which is now no longer free. So now you can do it for free.
Yeah.
Cool. So Visual Studio Toolbox, another episode by Robert Green.
Yes.
The Halloween episode. He's got the little pumpkin down there. And speaking of code analysis, he takes you through a lot of the code analysis tools that are in Visual Studio 2010 today. And,
right.
You know, a lot of people don't know quite all the power that these have. But he shows you how you can use these to identify some common coding problems that people have to make your code a little bit more secure. And then the other
naming convention, security,
exactly, all sorts of stuff,
performance.
The other cool thing about it,
globalization, reusability.
Mm-hmm. And the other cool thing about it is that I believe in 2008 we added help topics for all of these. So you can not only get the flag that says, hey, you know, you've got something wrong here, but you can then go into help and it says, hey, here's why this problem exists. Here's some examples of some bad code. Here's some examples of some fixed code, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So pretty neat.
Yeah, for those of you not using this, this is like one of those things that should just be on your checklist of before we release code.
Yep.
Make sure that all code analysis rules, and you know, you may want to specify a custom rule set,
yep.
or set choose what rule set. Like we, for example, typically don't do international examples, mm-hmm. like with a bunch of localizations. So you can turn those rules off.
Right,
they aren't necessarily relevant.
That's a good point, because sometimes people say, "Hey, I'm going to start using code analysis," and they turn off all the rules, and it's like, oh, man, I'm the worst programmer on the planet.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Every string is not localized,
yeah.
so therefore I am the fail.
So it gives you a lot of flexibility to turn those on and off, and even some default some.
And you
some
can even do it in code to basically tell it to ignore that warning for this particular part.
Oh, yeah, specific ones, yeah. So anyway, check that out.
Yeah, so which brings us to IPv6 for Dummies.
Yeah, so this is a conference talk that came out of Tech Days Bern, Switzerland, I guess. Yeah, that's... Bern, Switzerland. Anyway, IPv6, it's one of those things that's been around for a while, but not really in practice a whole lot. So
yeah, the only time I've hit it was when I was trying to do PNRP communication, peer name resolution protocol for new stuff in, yeah.
So are those real things, or did you just make up everything
no.
you just said?
it's another example. But the point is, I'm still kind of not used to IPv6.
Mm.
I'm really used to my 192.168, you know, 1.1 and to 255. So
mm-hmm.
I think having the four dummies of why V6,
mm-hmm.
what the specific things are, and like, for example, localhost is ::1.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel right, does it?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not 127.0.0.1.
What I want to know, what happened to IPv5?
IPv5? Isn't that what it was?
IPv4
no,
is the current
IPv4.
Status quo.
IPv5 was, I don't know, man.
I don't know. I'm putting my weight behind IPv5. I'm not sure 6 is going to really...
I'm pretty sure even number ones are the successful ones. IPv5 is probably...
Oh, is that what it is?
It's working at a garage or
all
something.
All right. That'll be a question for our users. I'm sure they'll come out with all sorts of interesting information for us.
Which brings us to a video Charles had done on .NET 4.5 size on disk improvements.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't had a chance to watch this one yet. It's all the Charles videos I end up scheduling for like holidays when I have multiple days that I can just sit down and watch Charles interview. But yeah, this talks about a lot of the improvements that they did to really reduce the amount of footprint that I think the .NET framework and CLR take up. I wasn't sure if it was that or the actual applications built for that take up less space. Did you know that?
I haven't seen this video, unfortunately.
All right.
So I thought you had.
I had not. Yes.
That's great.
Yes, so go watch it. We'll wait here. Come back. Tell us what you thought.
Which brings us to our pick of the week!
So my pick of the week is very self-promoting here, but I just finally published the version 1.0 of the TFS 2010 OData service.
This is from your blog?
This is
your pick of the week from your
blog.
This is from
Brian Keller. It's my pick of the week. I can pick whatever I want.
Go.
I can pick whatever I want. And so basically this allows you to front-end Team Foundation Server 2010 with an OData service.
Yes.
And there's already a couple of great examples of Windows Phone applications that people have built so that you can be checking your work items on the go, you can look at builds on the go, all that kind of stuff. So we released the beta earlier this year, and we revved it, took all your feedback, and now it's available in V1.
Awesome. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Cool. So my pick of the week is actually... Now, we had talked about this before, and in fact, Brandon Foy was at, I think it was last mix, feels so long ago, but the viral video that he built for Windows Phone, this is a video that he had done, found himself on YouTube, ended up being at Mix 11, and made a second video, and the point here, though, is we actually hired him.
Yeah.
So now he's a user experience designer in Windows.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love this fan-made stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah. And I don't think he's related to Laura Foy, by the way, although that may get confusing.
I see some similarity there.
Yeah.
They're both on Channel 9 now.
Okay. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
There we go. And thank you, Brian Keller.
Thank you, Dan Fernandez.
This has been a wonderful show, and we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.